Hey, legends, you know, none of our interviews or episodes ever date, ever. They are all timeless and ready for you for when you're ready to listen. Download the lot and rip in. This episode is brought to you by our wonderful sponsors at Griffin Air Conditioning. Visit them at griffinair.com.au. Welcome back to Andy Raymond Unfiltered, the Legend series and the Michael O'Connor story. Previously, we've spoken about the greatest schoolboy side ever assembled and the switch from union to league. The story continues.
7-6.
Yeah.
It was Andrew Farrell, was it, that broke your heart with a field goal and almost your nose from that high shot early?
Yeah. Oh, the old nose, it was broken well and truly before then. I went through my career in rugby union without a broken nose, and I broke it 7 times playing rugby league.
Jeez. Actually, rewind to the start of that year. 85 was when you first started regularly kicking goals for the club.
Yeah.
One of the first, maybe after Johnny Gray at North Sydney, of the new style round the corner kickers. Is that right?
Yeah. Johnny Gray, I think, was the first. Ross Conlon was a prodigious kicker at the time. Gee, he was a good goal kicker. But I grew up playing soccer as well on the oval across the road from my house.
Okay.
Next door neighbour was Italian and he was a soccer coach. So I was able to perfect that around the corner. It's just a soccer kick for me and it came very naturally. But it was then it was a matter of practice and like anything, you know. And it was great for me because it was an extra asset when it came to, you know, higher representative honours, you know. Like, for example, 1986. You know, it really gave me a leg up when you got competition like Brett Kenny, Gene Miles, Mal Meninga. So one of those guys ultimately had to miss out on the test squad because Mal wasn't kicking goals well then.
No.
Yeah. So I'd be happy to say that I got in because of my goal kicking. You need a goal kicker at that level, and I worked on it pretty hard. So.
1985 New South Wales debut, 1986 Australian debut. You'd become only the 37th man to be labelled a dual international, following Ray Price, preceding Ricky Stewart. What does that title mean to you, dual international? Does it hold a special place in the heart?
I think it's more just a recognition, I suppose. It's just, people do refer to me as the at the golf club. They call me, because the legend or the jewel or, but it's something that they, accept and acknowledge. I don't know. It's an achievement that, you know, that you obviously, you know, your life's for everybody, for, you know, you want to try and achieve and leave something. And so that's a great honour for me. Yeah.
You're still the most humble bloke I've ever met in all these years. The 1986 Kangaroo Tour, the Unbeatables. Only Terry Lamb played more games than you, and that was just to keep him out of the pubs. What's your fondest tour memory, Mick? 3 tries at Old Trafford in Test 1? Or is there a tour highlight that's away from the field?
Oh, look, I'll have to keep it on the straight and narrow and say that. No, seriously, that first Test match at Old Trafford, I don't think I ever felt an electric atmosphere like it. The singing and it was packed to the rafters, Old Trafford. And there was a genuine belief that they could beat us. They had a good team, like, you know, your Ellery Hanleys. This was a side that was prepared, really prepared to beat us. And if ever we were going to lose, it was that first Test match. And just the excitement and the adrenaline that I had and to score 3 tries – was unbelievable. And then just the noise and they were appreciative too. Like, they were a good crowd. The singing and, but we put on a masterclass. Like, you know, the back line was Sterling, Lewis, Meninga. Sorry, Miles, Gene Miles, Brett Kenny, myself. Like
Mal couldn't get into the side.
No, he was on the bench. Yeah. So that just shows you the depth that we had. And so I don't think I've ever been so excited about playing and enjoyed a game of football as much as that one because and it was a great relief to beat him.
Who was your roomie for the tour? And out of 10, what marking do they get?
Oh, Gary Belcher.
They've got two of the nice guys together. Gave you someone sane. That's positive.
Yeah. I always had pretty good roomies, you know. My first roommate ever on a trip was on an international trip to Argentina was a bloke called Stan Pilecki, and he was a chain smoker.
Yep.
And so that was interesting when you got no air conditioning. I mean, you can't open your windows and you wake up and you're sort of in a haze of smoke. And
Mick, I think I read something somewhere that you rate that 86 side, the Unbeatables, as the best you played with. Is that right?
It'd be the best. I think the best back line that I played with. Mm. Yeah. When you have a look at them, the players individually and how we all came together. Gary Jack was the fullback. And, you know, Gary Belcher, Gary Jack, they're two of the greatest fullbacks.
Underrated for mine, the pair of them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be as close to as good a back line I've ever played in, yeah.
By now, you know that no one likes Manly, and as the regular sign on the Brookvale Hill says, Manly hates you too.
Mm.
Why the Eagles, Mick? Business decision again?
Yeah, once again, I was going to move the year before, and I stayed for 1986. I was really disappointed 85, losing that grand final. Wanted to win a grand final, and I thought, probably selfishly, I thought that a change was as good as a holiday, and but the money was good, and they obviously offered significantly more than St George, but then St George didn't match the offer, and then they did right, and it was too late.
Yep.
So I'd already made up my mind, decided to go to Manly, and it was a good move. It was like a breath of fresh air. Went over to Doug Daly. Was the CEO at the time. He really looked after them. And what they did do well was look after families and everything was great off the field. You didn't have to worry about that. Very professional club. And to me, it was probably more like a rugby club than any other club in Sydney because of the just the social activities. The wives got on well, the families, just a really good group of blokes. And you just... I remember going to training and just not wanting to, just staying at training.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of touch footy after with Cliffy and, just enjoyed getting together with these guys and enjoyed their company. And that's when you know when you've had enough, when you're not enjoying training, when it becomes laborious and you often see players say as soon as training finishes, well, they don't even hang around for a shower, they're gone, you know. That was never the case at Brookie. It was great to get there and couldn't wait to get there and, get home late.
The 1987 Grand Final and Premiership, a highlight, no doubt. Is it the highlight?
Yeah, it would be because I did want to win a Premiership and that was our best chance. Once again, we were probably the best side all year.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a real scare in the major semi against the Roosters, and that was a real wake up call for us. And we were just coming up against one of the great Canberra sides, and they were in the throes of just something great, and they did. They went on to become a truly champion side, but we got them at the right time, just before. Mm-hmm. They peaked, and but they had a great year too. They weren't expected to get to the grand final, and so it was a pretty convincing win in the end. But more of a relief. You just feel relieved that okay, in your career you've won a grand final, and there are so many players, good players, representative players, who haven't won a grand final.
Yeah.
So that's just sleep better at night.
This is where I get excited, and this is where everyone listening to the podcast shuffles to the front of their seat a little. May 29, 1991. What stands out?
He's now given the New South Wales side an opportunity to win the game courtesy of the boot of Michael O'Connor.
2 from 3 for Michael O'Connor. He's 3 metres in. He's 20 metres out. Gets it away nicely.
He's kicked it.
What a great kick. Michael O'Connor has won the second State of Origin for New South Wales.
Oh, well, that's State of Origin 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd lost State of Origin 1. And people don't remember this at Lang Park, but I had an opportunity to kick a goal on full time, which would have evened the score. Mm. And because at the time we had a bloke called Matthew Ridge at Manly, I wasn't practicing my goal kicking, but I was the goal kicker, picked as the goal kicker for New South Wales, and I missed that kick. And I was just really filthy with myself, it was a tough kick. It was right on the sideline.
Mm.
But had I kicked it, would have drawn the game.
Griffin Air Conditioning offers the highest quality of air conditioning sales and service across the Sydney metropolitan area, providing installation and maintenance to commercial, domestic and industrial customers. Working with this team, you'll be guaranteed the latest services, technology and developments in the industry. Visit griffinair.com.au and tell them we sent you for a cool deal.
So I reckon I spent every available minute or hour between then and the next game practicing my goal kicking. I'd go down to parks, around where I lived, just with myself, with my footballs, and I remember breaking a window down at Bondi Surf Club because I was kicking balls up against this brick wall, and I just I skewed one. And but what I did, when I took that kick, I was actually quite confident, about my goal kicking, yeah. And I wanted to get it over with as quick as possible, and. People say to me, the pressure you must have felt because, to miss the goal was sort of series over basically because, we're one down. Best we could have done would have been to draw the series. But,
yeah.
So the pressure, it was pretty high. And I just wanted to get it over with as quick as possible. So it was a fantastic try. It went from one end of the field to the other. That game, my memory of that game was one of the nastiest games.
Yeah, there was a lot of game. Yeah,
a lot of feeling between the teams then, like Steve Walters and Benny Elias. Mm. You had Mark Geyer and Wally, and you had people like that, and Peter Jackson. They didn't like us. We didn't like them. And it was a really nasty game. Mm. Mark Geyer just went over the top. he was really fired up and. So you're on edge, and there was a lot of drop ball because of the rain.
Yeah,
it was a horrible night.
Oh, brutal conditions.
So, and then when we scored that try, it was such a relief. I thought, shit, we can win this. Yeah. And it came down to that kick basically, and I just hit it right in the sweet spot. I knew as soon as I hit it that it was going.
Did you really?
Yeah. That was one of the great kicks of my career, no doubt about it, and that's what I'm probably remembered for more than anything.
Was it your finest moment? Would you rather be remembered for something else, or are you happy with how that sits?
That's a good question, because people don't remember. I had to get back onto after that kick. There was still a minute and a half on the clock. And I had to pull down. There was a turnover, and Queensland got the ball.
Yes.
And I had to. I had a one on one with Mal Meninga, and he was steamed up, and he was running at me like a semi trailer. And I reckon the tackle I made on him after the kick
was better.
Oh, look, I got a lot more satisfaction out of that, bringing him down than the kick. But it is funny, isn't it, that you're remembered for. Mm. certain things. And I remember Paul Thurinen saying to me, Snoz, he said, look, you're lucky that, you know, Snoz, you're lucky because people remember you for that kick. You know, even Don McKinnon, you know, yeah. it gets remembered because he's had a leak at half time. I've never done anything. You know?
Yeah.
But it's true, isn't it? You know.
Considering the conditions, considering the theatre and the aggression of the game, it was a game that dominated headlines afterwards. The game's authorities thought the players had crossed the line and they cracked down hard. They talked tough. They were going to clean up the game. Well, Mal Meninga hadn't forgotten what happened in game number two, whether it was your goal kick or whether it was that tackle on him. He didn't miss you.
No, he didn't. And yeah, I spoke about that that car accident that I had when I was young. And if there's one incident that was it was more like that than anything else, was that incident with getting hit by Mal, because he's incredibly strong. And and the way he hit me too, my head was on the ground, so I had nowhere to go. It's funny, isn't it? Like, because you know, as a player, you you pretty much do what your coach asks you to do. And their coach was my coach. If you remember, Graham Lowe was coaching Queensland.
Yes.
Right. So
yeah.
So I've heard this, and it's secondhand, but that he was under instructions from Graham Lowe after what happened the week before. He was filthy that I kicked that goal.
Yeah.
Graham Lowe, because it, you know, would have been two up with going home to.
And Graham Lowe's the Queensland hero, despite the fact he's a New Zealander. Yeah.
So I've got no doubt that Mal was under instructions to take me out, and he was just doing what his coach wanted him to do. And unfortunately, it was it had a devastating effect on me, because I, as the goal kicker, I had none for four, none for five, or something that night, and they weren't hard kicks. I remember taking the kick afterwards after he hit me, and I should have been taken off the field back then. I got up and collapsed. My legs just were like jelly, but I took a goal kick and obviously missed it. That grieves me a little bit, that the result of that, and you know, but that's. Back then, that's the way the game was, you know, and it has cleaned up significantly since then. And but you do whatever it takes to win, and unfortunately, didn't pan out well for me.
Rugby league, rugby union has both cleaned up. Society is very different. Which brand of footy do you like more, 1991 brand or 2021?
Well, if you'd asked me that a couple of years ago, I'd definitely say 1991, because it was less structured.
Yep.
And I look at in the last couple of years, or you know, the last 10 years, you've seen teams just play the same way, and very structured, same second man plays, kick in certain positions on the field. Whereas coaches that I played under. We're not like that. Bob Fulton, Tim Sheens, they let you play and express yourself. And I loved that. The thing I loved about rugby league was that I could, I could do a chip and chase. And I wasn't afraid to do that, back myself. And I scored a lot of tries through just playing off the top of your head. Mm. And there's got to be some structure. I do understand that. But I think that the game is starting to swing back a little bit. With these new rules, I think I like the fact there's only one referee on the field at the moment. Yeah. I like the fact that they're playing an advantage, a six again advantage, and that's speeding up the game, and it's becoming a contest whereby, you know, you've got to be fit. You know, when we played, like the fittest side generally had a huge advantage, and so you should be rewarded for that, for your fitness. And you should be rewarded if you've got a bloke like Glenn Lazarus who can play 80 minutes of football, you know, rather than a bloke that you bring out for 20 minutes.
And
so, but I'm really enjoying actually watching rugby league again now in this new sort of era. But it's still not as good as – and we had characters back then too, yeah. You know. Like,
I agree.
You know, Sammy Bacco, and there were so many funny guys, you know, that I played with, real characters. And so I wouldn't change it. I think I came through a really golden era in rugby league.
Has the tough stuff or the dirty stuff of the late 80s, early 90s, it has worked its way out of the game. Are you glad to see that side of the game gone, that element of the game?
Yeah, I am. And yeah. And that was a thing with me. And I people would say to me, I remember the number of people, because I was doing a little bit of media work and I just couldn't get over it, like that you could go and play at Lidcombe or somewhere like that and it wasn't a TV game and it was just open warfare, you know. You'd have every tackle, you'd be hit high, and I just thought from a player safety, concern that they should get the tackles down. And I remember saying that, you know, the tackle, you know, they're saying around the chest, or at least the chest, but, you know, even around the waist, I was sort of saying, you know, maybe you've got to look at doing that. And, but that would fundamentally change. And there were too many old sort of people, would never ever sort of agree to that. But, I did speak up about it at the time, because, you know, with some games, the attitude, well, we've got to get them before they get us, basically. And,
wow.
So, yeah, there was a lot of head high stuff. And, you know, I think it's a shame, that you've got players now, you know, when you go to, these men of league lunches who are, you know, they're not in great physical shape.
They're not.
Yeah. And, but they, I mean, they were different times, and I can understand everything, you know. But I think the game has been significantly cleaned up, all for the better.
Random question. Who's the best goal kicker you've seen? Is that an easy or a hard question to answer?
Best ever. Well, the best, I think Matthew Ridge would have to go close.
Okay.
Yeah, he... You know, I'd watch him at training. I was happy for him to take over the goal kicking duties.
You were?
Oh yeah, yeah. Because he at training, like he could kick 10 from 10 from the sideline. Like he was just so accurate.
Wow.
And so I'd have to say Matthew Ridge. Yeah.
19 state of origins, 18 test matches, captain of Manly. At the end of 92, you called retirement, 32 years of age. From our seats, the legs still look fresh. Was it the right time in hindsight?
It's a little bit. I think it was, yeah, because you reach a stage in your life where you're starting to think, well, what am I going to do when I finish playing football? And I started to get a little bit concerned, and that feeling that I used to get about going to training, I started to sort of start thinking about other things and pursue, you know, like should I be doing this? And you start sort of planning for the future. And with rugby league, you've got to be in it all or nothing. It's it's not one of those games you can just sort of have
you're just only partially invested in it.
Yeah, show up. You got to be putting in more than you know just going to training. It's about thinking. And my wife used to get sort of upset with me because on a Friday, like I'd always say, go and have drinks with your girlfriends, because I was just non-talkative. I didn't, you know, there was no communication. And she learned over the years that, you know, and that's because you're preparing and you're thinking about the game. Yep. And, you know, if this was to happen and, you know, we've been training to do this move and I should be here. And, you've got to be thinking like that all the time and trying to anticipate. Mm. And when there's a try scoring opportunity, you've got to take it. And so when you start to lose that, and I felt like I started to lose that. And also I played in a state of origin and, Willie Kahn ran around me, and I'd never had that happen to me before. He just stepped around me and went, and I just didn't have. I thought, oh, this. So when you're feeling that, another player is better than you.
Yep.
But footballers are like, mate, they're like boxers.
Yeah.
They think that they're the best. And when you don't think you're the best, it's a time to get out.
That was your alarm bell, was it, Willie Kahn?
Yeah. He just did it so easily. Mm. I felt embarrassed that he, you know, got around me. I let him get around me and he just took off. Then I didn't have the, you know, he burned me. It was a combination of those things and feelings and, you know, and I think it was probably the right decision. You don't get any better when you get into your 30s. And rare exception, if you're a playmaker like Cameron Smith or, Cliff Lyons, but I'm talking about genius players who can get away with just, and the team is so reliant on them because of their knowledge. I probably wasn't one of those players. I was more of an individual, opportunist, finishing sort of a player than a creator.
When you look back on the athletic journey, what are you most proud of? Is there a memory or a moment? Is there an achievement? Is there a game? What stands out?
I think you're always, your first time that you're recognised and you get selected to play for your country, and that was after that Possibles Probables game at Concord Oval in 1979. And I heard my name read out to go to Argentina, and I just was so... I couldn't. I had to walk outside of the function, and I went and sat in the gutter for a while, and just sort of, did that really? I mean, am I really going to Argentina? Yeah. And I'll never forget that. And you know, to get selected to play for your country, and then also just the relief. And I really wanted I knew I wasn't ready initially to play for Australia in rugby league, and that was tough too. You know, it was a really tough road, but it was always a goal of mine. You know, once I changed over. To try and reach the top there, and that was a great. I just felt a great sense of achievement. It wasn't so much when I got selected in '85. I think I was raw then still. Mm. I'd only had 2 years of league, and I didn't play Test matches in New Zealand. But that '86 tour where we went through undefeated.
Yep.
That was a great. You know, that was one of the highlights. I think, yeah.
You would certainly come full circle in the respect that you would post-career end up in the ARU system. It's quite possibly a podcast for another time, as I'm sure there's stories that would go on for hours, but you coached, you serve as a selector, advisor. Was it nice to give something back to the game and remain involved, or do you look back now and think, geez, it was all too hard?
No, and I felt I did owe rugby union that.
Okay.
I did. And coming back and also just going, living back here in Queensland, my sons and the local rugby club, they played Riley, my youngest bloke. I coached him for a number of years. So I was sort of getting back to the grassroots, and then the game of rugby is in good shape at grassroots. Yep. And that sort of then I wanted to sort of I was really lucky actually. I was at a funeral, and I ran into a guy called Jeff Miller who was just after me, and he was at the time a high performance manager of the Australian rugby, and it was not long after rugby union became professional. Mm. And he said to me, would you be interested in talking to players and looking at young players in rugby league who you think would be suitable to play rugby union now that rugby union is professional? So I was in the right place at the right time. Yeah. I managed to get this job recruiting. And so I got involved with the early experiments with Matt Rogers, with Lottie Dakiri, with Wendell Saylor, talking to those guys, and you know, and they came over. Ultimately, were great for the game, great for rugby union. Those guys, you know, I remember sitting at Ballymore, and you know, and Wendell Saylor, like just the buzz about having Wendell playing rugby union. It was brilliant, you know. And those guys went on to have extremely successful Wallaby careers.
Yep.
Great for the game. So I was really fortunate I got involved there, and I did it at a junior level as well. And I sort of fell into there was a job vacancy for a manager of the Australian Sevens team. Mm. And Jeff Miller said to me, this is back in about 2001, or he said, look, we haven't got anybody to manage the team. Over Christmas, New Year, they're going to Argentina and Chile. And,
yep.
And she said, yeah, he said to me, can you ask, can you check with Susan? Would that be okay? I said, I don't have to check with Susan. That's me. Anyway,
yeah.
I'll never forget it because I wasn't I had no history of being a manager.
Yeah.
And I do remember Susan dropping me at the airport, Brisbane airport, and she laughs about it. She said, remember the last thing you said to me was, you wouldn't have a pen on you, would you? But it was a bit like that. And from there, I went over and, Matt Guido was on that trip. And I could see just the potential of the game, and we got big crowds in a place called Mar del Plata in Argentina, and we played at Santiago, and good healthy crowds of 10,000 people. I thought, gee, this is and I did play sevens when I played rugby, and played in the Hong Kong sevens on three occasions with the Ella Boys, and we won the comp up there 1 year. And I could see the potential of the game, and at the very least, just as a talent ID, which I was into, a talent ID exercise, because having seven players out on the field, I mean, if you've got any weaknesses, they're soon exposed.
Yeah,
yeah. So that was it was a great break for me to be able to get involved with the sevens, and then I subsequently became coach. Under Robbie Deans. Robbie Deans asked me to coach the team when he took over the 15s, and he worked a lot closer with the sevens as a talent ID avenue as well. So, yeah, I was lucky. I was in that. But I do feel a sense that I did owe rugby something, because I felt as though I walked out on them when I went to rugby league, and so it sort of came full circle, really.
Do you still love your footy, both codes? Are you one of us that throughout winter from Friday night to Sunday, the TV's pretty much on some form of rugby?
Yeah. I pick and choose a little bit now, and I still have a soft spot for obviously Manly and Saints, and I generally watch their games, or always watch their games. But but if there's a big game on... Penrith, Parramatta, or look, a good game of footy, I don't care. You soon get into it, and so I still enjoy it. I'm still watching the rugby as well. Enjoy the rugby. So watch the golf. Watch
a sporting tragic.
Yeah,
you made the difficult look easy with speed, grace, and a style that was very distinctly your own. An amazing cross-code athlete. And you remain, as I said earlier, quite possibly the most understated great the game has produced. Michael O'Connor, thank you. You, sir, are a legend.
We hope you enjoyed the Michael O'Connor story. If you did, before you go, we'd ask you to leave a 5-star rating and review on the podcast app you're currently listening on. It helps us spread the word as we continue to grow the podcast. Make sure you... come back soon, legends.